This is an iHeart podcast.
D-Day today. Pete Hegseth joins us, talks about D-Day, the state of our military, all kinds of lawfare stuff with Margot Cleveland, my friend, comedian Dave Smith. I mean, we are stacked tonight on I'm Right. Well, what is today? Yeah, and yes, believe me, I am aware of all the news of the day, the lawfare stuff. We have Pete Hegseth. There's so much modern news stuff we're going to get to. But what is today? Today is the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Now, I'm going to do something just really, really briefly here. First, remember, this was Operation Overlord. What was Operation Overlord? We didn't know how to get into Europe. Hitler had taken it all and had fortified it all. And we were trying to figure out, how do we get in? You know, we look at a map and we think, well, just go in here. No, he had fortified the whole thing. On the Atlantic coast, 3,000 miles of fortifications. That's what Hitler had done. Barbed wire, pillboxes, you name it, the works. He loaded it all up. They came up with Operation Overlord. And we went. Now, I want you to imagine something. And then we're going to move on. We'll talk about some other things, what Biden said and all that other stuff today. But I want you to picture this. You get up at 3 a.m. It's cold outside. You're so nervous, you have a hard time eating breakfast. Maybe you got some down, maybe you don't. You throw on all your gear, and you head down to the water. It's still dark, and it's cold. It's cold, cold, rainy. And you step into a boat. You're very careful not to touch the water in the English Channel because it's cold too. You're already cold. You're already nervous. You already got the shakes. And you step into this boat. And then the boat begins to move in the dark towards danger. And you know this. And the waves start coming over the sides. The sea is so terrible. One of your boats capsizes. Everyone lost. The water starts flooding in. Now you're soaking wet. You're freezing cold. You're nervous. You're seasick to the point the bottom of the boat is starting to fill up with vomit. And on you go. And soon you begin to make out the outline of a cliff, a tall cliff in front of you. It's all dark and black. And as you get closer and closer and closer to that cliff, it starts to shoot at you. Mortar shells, machine gun fire. Your friends start to get hit. And finally, you land on the beaches underneath this 100-foot-tall cliff. You and your friends are being shot at from the Germans above. They're chucking grenades down at you. But you don't just get to hide. There's nowhere to retreat to. It's just the ocean back behind you. You have to use ladders and grappling hooks with ropes on them like you're Batman to get to the top of this cliff while you're being shot at and blown up. One of your buddies right beside you was halfway up the cliff, 30 feet up, and the Germans cut the rope and down he goes right in front of you. That was the story. That's a brief part of the story of the 2nd Ranger Battalion and what they did on D-Day. It's a lesser known part of D-Day. Yes, they scaled a 100-foot-tall cliff and fought the Germans on top of it. Can you even imagine the kind of bravery it takes? 225 men set out to do that day. By dawn the next day, 70 of them could stand and wield a rifle. Unimaginable bravery. And we honor all of them today. The bravery that takes, all of you, it's amazing to me. I could never do it. Whatever that is, I don't have it. I don't know what that is. Now, that's D-Day. That's a little brief story on D-Day. You probably listening to that story, probably, I would guess, stirred a little something in you. Patriotism, some sort of pride, maybe even sadness for those who lost their lives. But something in you stirred when I was just talking to you for a couple minutes, didn't it? It's natural. Look, when I was sitting down doing some things before the show, I'm talking, full disclosure, you know, I'm not the touchy-feely type. I choked up a little bit. A couple little parts that I left out, they got me. They got me bad. But I want you to listen to something. And set aside your anger as best you can. But Joe Biden, of course, had to pretend to care about D-Day today. Went and gave a little speech, and of course, he made it political.
We're living in a time when democracy is more at risk across the world than any point since the end of World War II, since these beaches were stormed.
Hillary Clinton went on social media today and said something similar. 80 years ago today, thousands of brave Americans fought to protect democracy on the shores of Normandy. This November, all we have to do is vote. Taking a day like this, a day about America, a day to honor the troops, to honor their sacrifice, to honor their service, and making it about an election, about politics, how could they do that? How could they be so tone deaf? You've seen a lot of that today if you've seen these comments. Well, I just need to explain something to you. These people don't share your value system at all. It is so critical that you understand that you're dealing with a totally different animal. I could sit Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton down. I could sit your liberal Aunt Peggy down in front of me, and I could spend an hour going over the stories of just that 2nd Ranger Battalion on D-Day and the ropes and the ladders and the blood and the bombs and the bullets and the sacrifice, and nothing inside of them would stir. None of the things that just stirred inside of you would stir at all. It wouldn't even make a dent. It would be like I was talking to a monkey. Nothing would stir inside of them. You have to understand that our country is led, you, me, we share a country with people who feel nothing for it. For the elite communists who run this country, the Joe Bidens, the Hillary Clintons, America's nothing but a bank vault to be looted. They'll do whatever they can and then leave the carcass when they move on to something else. For the street communists, the dirt balls in the streets with the this and the that, the climate change and the Black Lives Matter, whatever else it may be, America's just a gigantic evil empire to be burned. It is critically important that you and I understand and accept we share a country with people who feel nothing for it. We're led by people who feel nothing for our nation. And look, it's part of why these people are apparently so willing to get us into World War III. Do you see what Joe Biden said today?
Are American weapons being used right now inside Russia?
They're authorized to be used in proximity to the border. We're not authorizing strikes 200 miles into Russia. We're not authorizing strikes on Moscow, on the Kremlin.
We are authorizing U.S. weapons to be used inside of Russia's borders. Do you understand what an escalation that is? You understand that that is forcing Vladimir Putin to respond in kind. Hate Vladimir Putin all you want. I certainly do. He is able to remain leader of Russia because he sells himself as the strong man protector of Russia. That's how he sells himself. He cannot allow American weapons to kill Russians inside of his border without a response. He can't. So on this 80th anniversary of D-Day, when we think about all the blood and bombs and bullets and death and sacrifice, look at the people we have now and how willing they are to send our sons and daughters back again. It just blows me away. Well, it is awful to be led by people like this, people who don't care about our troops. I mean, Joe Biden, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. He's president. He is the commander in chief. And the guys I know who are still in do not feel valued, to put it mildly. Joining me now, Pete Hegseth, author of the book, The War on Warriors. You really should pick this book up and find out exactly how our guys are being treated. Pete, honestly, it's not exactly something new that guys who are in don't exactly get treated great. You don't join to get treated great. You're not signing up to stay at the Hilton. That's not how it works. But it would be nice if you didn't have this never-ending feeling of betrayal from the people who lead you, not just the politicians, but the dirtball flag officers we have now in this military.
100%. You know, that's why the subtitle is Behind the Betrayal of the Men Who Keep Us Free. It is generals with stars on their shoulder who are cowards, who ultimately wouldn't stand up to the ideologies being rammed down the throats of our leadership. They never stood up and said, nope, hey, you know, women in combat's not going to work very well. They're not going to stand up and say, we're not going to do this trans stuff. They didn't stand up and say, hey, we don't need your CRT and DEI. It causes division inside our ranks. It only creates skepticism and animosity. And no one ever threw their stars on the table, said, we're not doing it. So as a result, this book is not how the military went woke. It's how the military allowed itself to go woke. You're right, because there were cowards in camouflage who wouldn't make tough calls or retire or call it out or resign and say, I'm not doing this. Because politicians are going to do what politicians do. We know what left-wingers do. They do crazy stuff. Just keep it out of our military where it's life or death. Because you're right, we all signed up, we get the uniform and the bad haircut. We know we're not in for paradise. We're in because we love the country. And a lot of vets, you know this, you talk to these guys, I talk to them, are questioning whether they would recommend it for their sons and their daughters in the future. And that's pretty understandable considering what folks have done to the military.
Pete, I'll tell you right now, I've got two boys, 13 and 15, and they're not joining. I realize they can do whatever they want when they're 18, but my kids are out. And I don't know a single GWAT veteran friend of mine who feels differently. And these are guys who come from military families. We're talking WW2, Korea, Vietnam, my grandpa, my dad, my uncle. I fought in Iraq, I fought in Afghanistan, and now they're telling their kids, nope, you're done with all this. These are the families who win our wars, Pete, and they're done. And the guys who are in 100%. Are getting out. The retention crisis is as bad as the recruiting crisis.
What do we do? Where do we go? Who stands up? Who does it? And because you're right, this has always been a family business. Here's the crazy part. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't like your tax rates, you can move to another state. If you don't like your school, you can move to another school. If you don't like the 101st Airborne, where else do you go? I mean, if you don't like the Marine Corps, where else? There's nowhere else to go. So we're a republic which has turned on itself. We know that. We're in a cold civil war. We teach our kids to hate the country that they live in. We trans our kids. I mean, it's a disaster. But if we lose the military, then where else do we turn? So I grappled with that very same question. My friends say the exact same thing. The last chapter of the book is a letter to my five sons about whether I would want them to serve. And I didn't know what I would write because I've kind of been in your camp for the longest time. And at the end of the day, I think if there was a Trump presidency and a real realignment of the Pentagon, if we're saying, you know, heads are rolling, we're firing woke generals, we're putting a real SecDef in charge, a real chairman of the Joint Chiefs, we're getting rid of DEI and CRT at our military academies, we're going to focus on readiness, let's take the standards back to 1995, whatever they were in 1995, let's make them that, and stick with them. I could see myself recommending my boys serving. But under this, I mean, Jesse, you probably don't know this story. I told it in the book for the first time. I was dubbed an extremist by my National Guard unit following the 2020 riots and when we were going to go guard the inauguration. That's why I got out. So it's personal for me. It's personal for you. Everybody's seen something, whether it's vaccine mandates, whether it's a first getting promoted in whatever slot, whether it's training being diverted to some nonsense instead of, I don't know, gunnery tables. Like everybody's seen an aspect of it. We got to fix it where do we turn?
Yeah. No, look, if they could make those kind of changes, I'll drop my boys off at the recruiting office. But it's just the way it is now. Pete, I want to ask you this because you were an officer, Afghanistan, Iraq, a ground pounder, not one of these Pogue types. But anyway, you were an officer. But these guys, these generals we were just lamenting about a couple minutes ago, they were too. I mean, Mark Milley, we all dog on him now, justifiably so. Mark Milley's a piece of trash. But Mark Milley back in the day was Pete Hegseth. Mark Milley was a pipe hitter. Mark Milley was a stud. So what happened when the things on the bars changed? What happens in there, Pete? Explain it to me because I don't understand. First Lieutenant Mark Milley would beat the crap out of four-star Mark Milley.
That's back when he did PT. You're exactly right. He's a centerpiece of an example of... part of the answer is I don't know. Why does that transformation happen? There's a lot of reasons I unpack in the book. Ultimately, you know, guys like Mark Milley went to the same woke elite colleges. Our military now sends all of our senior officers to Ivy League schools or elite schools to go look more like civilians. They're supposed to educate civilians on military life. They come back, They come back with a pink hue to their camouflage, and they want to be liked by the chattering class. There's a lot of that. But general officers, that ranked, it's become about careerism. It's become about get along to go along. Find the current and ride it. The most dangerous thing you could do is take a risk or take a stand. And they know no one's actually held accountable for warfighting aspects, so they're willing under Obama and under Biden to cater, to say, okay, well, not what I would do, but you know what? I'm here, so I'll make sure it be shepherded okay. Or, oh yeah, I know we don't really need electric tanks, but the politicians are telling me, so we're gonna do it with the best military know-how that we can. They rationalize it by thinking they can make it less worse, and then they start justifying it, and then they get in front of congressional committees and they end up defending it like Milley did, and pretty soon they've sold the farm off. I know for a fact Milley has this book and he hates it. I've got that on direct knowledge because it calls him out specifically as an example of this. But I also have talked to a three-star Marine Corps general who was a part of integrating women into the combat units. And he proudly talked about it. And when I was like, well, you know they're less combat effective. Oh, that's not true. Oh, blah, blah, blah. It's like, do you think men and women are not physically different? Are we going down that train at this point? So they just rationalize it to go along, to get their stars, and then get their job in corporate America at some defense contractor, and where they keep making money. They're just listening to the politicians and ignoring their oath of office.
Yeah. Countries led by militaries led by General Raytheon now. This freaking blows me away. Pete, yeah. My brother, thank you. I appreciate you very much. All right. We have a lot more. You thought the January 6th people going to prison were the only ones? You thought Donald Trump being convicted, possibly sent to prison, was the only one? As I have said, without real retribution, this doesn't stop. Another Trump ally is about to go to prison. We'll talk about that next. Before we talk about that, let me talk to you about your cell phone company. Look, these cell phone companies are awful. Almost all of them are. They're awful because they take our money. You pay your cell phone bill automatically. We all do. You put in your credit card, it gets paid automatically every single month. And then they take your money and they send it to Planned Parenthood. They send it to Black Lives Matter. They send it to all these disgusting groups, Pride Month stuff. You don't need Verizon. You don't need AT&T. You don't need T-Mobile. There's a patriotic cell phone company that shares and promotes your values. Your bill will get cut in half. Mine did. My bill got cut in half. You don't sacrifice coverage. You can keep your phone, keep your number. It's Pure Talk, man. Switch to Pure Talk. Anniversary of D-Day, Pure Talk CEO is a vet who fought for this country. They are adamant about America and Americans. Switch, save money. There's no reason not to. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. Go switch. We'll be back. All right, let's address something real quick before we move on to the rest of our show. Steve Bannon is going to jail now. Department of Justice is taking yet another Trump aide and throwing him in jail. And I just want to once again emphasize that I know what I'm about to say is ugly. I know it is uncomfortable. I know it's not who you want to be. I know it's not the country you want to live in. And it's not the kind of country I want to live in either. We have to start arresting Democrats and throwing them in prison. Republican AGs in red states have to begin arresting Democrat congressmen, senators. There should already be an arrest warrant issued for Joe Biden the day he's out of the presidency. We have to begin arresting Democrats, putting them on trial, convicting them, and throwing them in prison. I know that's terrible. I really do. But the truth is, they're not going to stop. They've been arresting these poor January 6th people for years. They're gunning them down in Utah. They're throwing pro-lifers in prison. They're disbarring Trump's attorneys. Trump himself may go to jail. Now Bannon's going to jail. These people are not backing off or slowing down because you're mad or I'm mad, and they won't. They're ramping up. They're ramping up because we refuse to respond in kind. Without arrests, without Democrats going to prison, we cannot save the country because we can't stop them from doing what they're doing. They will never stop, ever, unless we make them stop. I heard Andrew McCabe on CNN. He said this today, and I'll tell you what, I stood up and cheered. He's, of course, lying, but I wish he was telling the truth.
He runs the risk of really dismantling and greatly incapacitating the Department of Justice and the FBI. I have a lot of conversations with former colleagues, people who are or were in the intelligence and law enforcement community and may have worked in, you know, the Obama administration, other places. And, you know, people are really trying to assess, like, what is life going to be like if Donald Trump wins a second term? And on a very personal level, I mean, these are torturous discussions with their family members about whether or not they have to leave the country to avoid being unconstitutionally and illegally detained. I mean, people are actually worried about being thrown in jail or grabbed in some sort of extrajudicial detention.
Okay, first of all, let's be clear. Donald Trump's not going to do that. He's on social media still bragging about building the FBI a new building. He's not going to do that. If he was going to do that, if Donald Trump got up today and announced that he intends to arrest and imprison a bunch of FBI agents, I would publicly max donate to his campaign. I would call every rich guy I know and fundraise for him. I would make phone calls for him. I would knock on doors for him in my MAGA hat. That is exactly what must happen in order to save the country. Andrew McCabe is, of course, lying, or his friends are lying. None of these people have any fear at all, and that is the problem. Unless the bad guys start being afraid, we cannot save America. We can't normal our way back into saving our country. That's simply a fact. All right? All right. Now, I'm a little wound up today. You know why I'm a little wound up today? It's actually not the news stories. I just keep knocking out 8 hours of sleep and 8 hours of sleep and 8 hours of sleep. It's just consistent over and over and over again. How do I do that? Well, if there's ever a night where I feel like I'm not going to sleep, maybe I had an afternoon cup of coffee, which I shouldn't do, I just reach for Dream Powder. Isn't that a cool name for it? Beam, they came up with this stuff called Dream Powder. Now, it's all natural. It's all natural. And the beauty of that is not the taste, even though it's wonderful. Mine is cinnamon chocolate. I essentially have a cup of cinnamon hot chocolate for dinner. Or not after dinner, I have that before bed. Because it's natural, I not only go to sleep, I wake up and I feel great. I don't wake up and feel heavy and groggy like you do when you take things to sleep. Beam doesn't do that. You wake up, you're ready to go. That sound good? You should go get some. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly gets you a huge discount. Go buy a bag or two of Dream Powder. You will own it for life. Trust me, you'll keep going back. We'll be back.
Hunter Biden struggled with addiction. We are a country that has been riddled with addiction, and a percentage of this population has struggled with fentanyl and all sorts of opioids. And, you know, addiction is a real American problem. So the fact that they keep hammering him on being an addict, on having a gun, you know, and also on having a gun, which Republicans really like guns. So I think this is going to keep going. But I do think Biden has a really good opportunity here to say the law is the law for everyone, be it my son or Donald Trump. You know, this is the way it works in this country.
Yeah, if Hunter Biden gets convicted, Joe Biden's going to wait about 15 minutes before he pardons it. But I don't think he's going to get convicted anyway. I'm curious what Margo has to say about it. Joining me now, Margo Cleveland, senior legal correspondent with The Federalist. And actually, you have a piece up about all this in The Federalist. Margo, what are you saying? What do you think?
Well, first, I just have to chuckle at that soundbite you played. The reason they're focusing on Hunter Biden being an addict is because that is one of the things they have to prove in this case, that he either is an addict or that he was using drugs. And they've presented evidence of both. The other thing is, Republicans, yeah, we love the right to bear arms, but we always say legally, we don't want people who aren't supposed to be possessing them. It's the Democrats who think all guns should be gone no matter what. It's the violation of the law that Hunter Biden did that is the problem here. But I'm with you. I don't think that the jury is going to convict him. I think all you have to do is look what the breakdown in the city was for voting. And it was actually higher pro-Biden over Trump in 2020 than in Manhattan. So I don't see that we're going to see a conviction in this case.
Oh, okay. Now, you need to explain that to me, Margot. How could there not be a conviction when it's my understanding, and obviously, as you know, I'm not the lawyer, you are, this is as black and white as it gets. He lied on this form, one I've filled out many times, to purchase the firearm. He lied about it. It's black and white evidence because this freaking moron wrote a book about being an addict while he lied about the form. It's dead to rights. I mean, Johnny Cochran couldn't get him out of this. How could he get out of this, Margo?
Well, there are two things here you have to keep in mind. Is one is the idea of jury nullification. The jury says, yes, we can and we will follow the law. It doesn't mean that when they get back in the jury box, that one person won't convince the others that, look, yes, he was an addict. Yes, he lied, but he's turned his life around. And really, this is something that 5 years ago they didn't pursue. Why are they doing it now? It's a political reason that they're pursuing it now, and therefore we should let him off. So that's the idea of jury nullification. And then the second part of that is they have to prove intent. And juries aren't always the, you know, the brightest bulb in the box. And Hunter Biden's got some really good attorneys who can try to convince them that in his mind he wasn't an addict, because he was in rehab. In his mind, he wasn't a user, or he wasn't using, because he wasn't using the moment he purchased the gun. Now, the evidence is overwhelming that both of those should be rejected. But again, the jury might decide otherwise for it. But another thing I think is important to keep in mind is, even if Hunter Biden is convicted of this, it isn't somehow showing that we have one standard of justice under the law. Hunter Biden, those on the Biden side of the equation, the folks in the DOJ, they did everything they could to prevent this case from coming to trial. And if you contrast that with what happened with Donald Trump, it was all of the outsiders doing everything they could to get a case against Donald Trump. So even if Hunter is eventually convicted on this or on the tax case, it doesn't show that there's this one standard of justice. What it shows is that the two standards of justice failed to actually get the results that they wanted. They wanted Hunter to walk on this. It just didn't fly because of the whistleblowers.
Margot, sentencing. What do you expect for Hunter? And I might as well just go ahead and ask the follow-up now. What do you expect for Donald Trump?
Right. So I would not be surprised if Hunter has a sentence that does not require any jail time. There is a lot of discretion under the federal statutes and the guidelines. I'd have to double check to make sure there's no mandatory minimum of imprisonment by statute. If there isn't, then I would say there's not going to be any jail time, because he did, as far as we can tell, has his addiction under control, which is a great thing. As the soundbite said, there are a lot of addicts in this country. It's a horrible thing. And if he actually has it under control, that's great. And on this charge, maybe no jail time. For Donald Trump, it is impossible to tell, because this judge is so wacky that I could see him ordering him, Donald Trump, to go directly to jail, trying to keep him out of the Republican convention. It shouldn't be a matter of jail time because of the type of offense it was, which was a made-up offense that were really misdemeanors that the statute of limitations ran out. But it is impossible to predict what this judge will do.
Margot, who's going to step in, if anybody, and save Trump from this, overturn this conviction? I know Trump has been harping at the Supreme Court to step in. Are they going to? Is that a good idea? Surely someone's going to step in and toss all this out, right? And if they are, when are they going to do it?
Well, no one is going to step in. It's going to be a matter of Donald Trump's legal team filing a challenge. And whether he does this first in the state court, which is the typical process, or somehow tries to bring this in the federal court first, I highly doubt that will happen, because under the federal system, you're supposed to exhaust all of your state court remedies before you jump over to federal court. I could see his attorneys trying to go straight to the highest court in New York and trying to get them to do an expedited appeal to throw the conviction out. And then if that does not happen, that he then goes and tries to get the Supreme Court to take it from there based on due process claims. Because this is a state court conviction. The only way the Supreme Court can intervene is if Trump's lawyers have a basis to bring it to the court. And they do. A violation of Donald Trump's due process rights would be a way to get it to the Supreme Court. But there's going to have to be at least one step in the state court system before it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay, so the Supreme Court's not going to swoop in here and save the day in the next 10 minutes. Before I let you go, Margot, the U.S. Sure. Supreme Court, it's very obvious to me from the outside looking in that the commies in this country are running an op against the Supreme Court. They threaten them all the time. They threaten them with legislation. One of these dirty street monsters tried to kill Kavanaugh. They're protesting in front of their houses. It's very obvious they're going after the Supreme Court. Are they going to end up being successful in that?
They aren't. And this is really, to me, it looks like a ploy to get votes. They're trying to make the Supreme Court an issue, and they don't have anything else they can go on with Joe Biden. He's been a failure on everything. Inflation, the economy, foreign affairs, the border. So what are they going to do? That the Supreme Court is controlled by the president. And look what Trump has done by appointing these right-wing wackos who have no ethics. So it's not going to work, but it's not going to work from the judicial standpoint. It might have, you know, some vote getting by the political, you know, the political basis of it.
Yeah. Margot, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. Dr. Birx, you remember her, don't you? She's still out there running her mouth on TV about new things that you need to do, I need to do, new ways we can destroy the economy, of course, in the name of medicine and science. We'll talk to comedian my friend Dave Smith next about that. Before we talk to Dave, let's talk about the headache of a timeshare you don't want anymore. Do you have one of those? It's very common. If you're in this situation, don't think that you're alone, okay? And don't feel like some kind of an idiot. Oh, I can't believe I didn't read the fine print. You get in these timeshares, and then when it comes time to get out, the timeshare company tries to drop that bomb on you. Oh, yeah, sorry, you signed the contract. You're not allowed out. So what do? You call, you email, please. And they say, no, pay your annual fees. Call Lone Star Transfer instead. Stop calling the timeshare company. You already know their answer. Call Lone Star Transfer. This is a family business. They've been doing this for a long time. Over 20,000 timeshare owners are free, legally and permanently free of their timeshare because they called Lone Star Transfer. They are successful 99% of the time. Just call them and they'll get you out, all right? 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
I'm making the personal sacrifices not to infect my parents and my pregnant daughter. I worry about that because then it gives people the option to say, well, if bars and restaurants are open, then I can have 20 people over for Thanksgiving. And so I don't like it to be any number. I like it to be keep it to your immediate household.
I almost forgot that the interviewer used to sit so far away during the interviews. It's such a stupid time. And remember that evil witch you just saw there. About the time that interview wrapped up, she popped the earpiece out of her ear and went and partied with all of her extended family. That's the kind of people who run this country now. Joining me now, my friend, comedian Dave Smith. He hosts the Part of the Problem podcast, which I would highly recommend. Dave, I still get angry about all that crap. I do, But it's so ridiculous. When I see the old videos, it just the laughter comes out of me, man. What a ridiculous nation we turned into because of a chest cold.
Yeah. Oh, good to see you, Jesse. And it is, even as you're playing that clip, like I haven't seen that one in forever. And it is just like this, like, was it all a dream? Did we really allow our nation to be so degraded, humiliated that this, and by the way, you know what I completely forgot about? It's like, oh yeah, remember they had that death count up on the side of CNN for the entire year of 2020 until Joe Biden got sworn in. And then they just pretended like it didn't exist anymore. But it was what a wild time. And of, you know, watching as I was just watching some of the Fauci hearings, it's just amazing how much they all have to walk away from it. Like they can't defend one inch of the insanity.
No, they can't. No one can. Now all you get is either flat out denials, or they'll get this candy. I can't say that word on a family show, but you get this response of, well, nobody knew, which is of course garbage. Tons of people knew. They were all the people who got censored off of social media. Speaking of Birx, here she was along those lines.
Do you think there is any veracity to some of the Republican accusations that there was an effort to discredit the lab leak theory?
I think early on, people did take very definitive sides, and it did divide along party lines, and we're still suffering from that 4 years later in a whole set of issues related to pandemic and pandemic preparedness.
Sure, but on the lab leak specifically, you think that happened?
I do think it happened.
It was a lab leak. We know they covered it up. They lie about everything.
Yeah, and you know, as is often the case, they kind of project this thing onto the Republicans that I wish was true. Well, it was a partisan issue, and the Republicans were all talking about. No, I'm sorry. The overwhelming majority of Republicans tucked their tail between their legs, said, yeah, lab leak is a conspiracy, and then proceeded to push lockdown policies just like the Democrats did. There's a couple of exceptions. You know, obviously DeSantis walked back lockdowns in Florida. Noam was solid on it the whole way through. But that's it. Everybody, every other Republican was just as bad as the Democrats on this. But look, there's such an asymmetry here where she goes, well, there was this tendency to you know, plant your foot in the ground and stick with your side of the issue. It's like, yeah, but the asymmetry there is that everyone from all of the halls of power, including both political parties, the entire corporate media, and the tech overlords, all decided that you would have your life ruined if you talked about this coming from the lab, which was obvious by April of 2020. I mean, I remember the first time I heard, it was in April of 2020, was the first time that I heard that there were three or four scientists from the Wuhan lab who had been hospitalized in late November to early December with COVID-like symptoms. And that was about it for me. I was like, okay, well, then obviously this is what happened. They already knew that the bats that they thought had it weren't within a couple hundred miles of the wet markets. It just, none of it made any sense. It was obvious what this was from the beginning. And their side covered it up because they funded gain of function research at this lab. So it's quite a cope to spin that as, well, both sides just dug in. Like, okay.
Yeah, I forgot. We all got it from a bowl of bat soup. They actually sold that to us. Like, I can't with these people. And to reinforce Dave's point, almost every single Republican, there are a couple he didn't name there, Rand Paul, Thomas Massie types, but almost every one of them stood there with the stupid mask on, bragging about how vaccinated they were. It was pathetic. You know what? Along those lines, Dave, is that why we're never going to get a reckoning? I'm not naive. I want one. I want all these people arrested and thrown in federal prison. But I know this is never going to happen. And I have this theory that it's never going to happen because we would have to throw so many from our side right in there beside them.
Yeah, well, listen, first of all, you're absolutely right to point out Massey and Rand Paul, who were both heroic during the whole thing. There are a handful of Republicans who are truly outsiders, and I don't just mean on the COVID issue, but on other issues in general. You have people like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and people like that who do not, they're not simply with the party. But I think the reality that we live under is that, look, Donald Trump, say in 2016 when he ran and won the White House, he was as much a repudiation of the Republicans as he was of the Democrats. I mean, he told Jeb Bush to his face that his brother lied us into war. And that Donald Trump was, he was essentially a third party candidate winning from within one of the major parties. But the problem that we have is that the establishment of the Republican Party, like not the six people we just named, but everyone else, is indistinguishable from the establishment of the Democratic Party. And whether it, you know, obviously COVID was a major issue, they were identical on that. But when it comes to monetary policy, foreign policy, government spending, money, you know, like I said, monetary policy, when it comes to the shadowy three-letter agencies who have a lot more control over our government than our elected officials, almost every issue that matters, if you run down the list, there is no daylight between the establishment of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And so, yeah, in order to have any real change in this country or to even get an investigation, let alone an investigation we could actually trust that would actually shed some light on anything, you're going to have to make good on Donald Trump's original promise of draining the swamp. And that's no small undertaking. And if Donald Trump's going to get that right this time, he's going to have to be much, much better at appointing people around him, appointing real outsiders and not swamp creatures. And he's going to have to be willing to kind of Malay style take an axe to the federal government. That means abolishing agencies, drastic cuts in government spending. I'm not sure I've seen any indication that he's really learned this lesson yet, and he's up to it for round two. But we'll see.
Oh, gosh. What if someone were to cut government agencies to zero? Gosh, that would be glorious. You know what? I can't possibly let you go without playing this little back and forth you had with Chris Cuomo. Here it was.
And by the way, I don't like what people did to Joe Rogan about ivermectin. I don't
you
like it.
You did it.
No.
Okay, yes, you did.
Find the clips.
Dude, find the clips. You shamed Joe Rogan.
Hold on. Let's play the clip.
Injecting drugs for animals and horse.
And people telling them to.
Oh, my God.
What person? You know, you talk about, like, you know, cancel culture and who to shame. Ivermectin? A dewormer? Really?
They are shaming themselves.
That's
no
what it is.
Shame them. They're shaming themselves.
So you're taking a dewormer right now.
This is
Chris, you
de-wormer.
Can't apologize for that.
This.
You weren't being clear that it was this, right. And you know that, dude. You're being so dishonest right now,
I'm,
man.
I'm not being
You were
dishonest.
Talking about ivermectin, the drug. You were not talking about this version of ivermectin. Come on,
I
man.
Was responding to a situation where we were told that this is what people were searching out to take, and nobody knew what it was going to do to them. Look. I'm taking the drug right now. Obviously, I don't think it's all poison.
Dave, I'll just let you have it, buddy.
Oh, man. I mean, look, I don't know what I could even add to that you didn't see right there. It was a very surreal moment. It's surreal for me because I'm, you know, I'm me. And here I get this one-on-one debate with the guy who had the biggest show on CNN at the time when all of this was happening. And I was kind of curious going into it. I was like, what is he possibly going to say? What could his defense for all of this possibly be? And then it's just that. It's just lying through his teeth. Oh, I never did that. And then when the video comes up of him blatantly doing that, he actually tried to say that he wasn't demonizing ivermectin in general. He was just demonizing people taking the veterinarian version of ivermectin, like as if you got it prescribed for a horse and then you took it, which obviously was never what him or anyone at CNN was talking about. They were talking about Joe Rogan, who clearly got it from a doctor and prescribed him the people version of ivermectin. Like, it was just, look, it was, it again, it was very similar to me to Fauci in his testimony yesterday when he was saying that, oh, you know, what was it that we were just saying that the vaccine stopped you from getting it or transmitting the virus in the first wave. We were never saying it through the second and third wave, even though we all remember this wasn't that long ago. I mean, it's like we all remember you saying this the whole way through and never backing off of that. And then as it became clear that the vaccine didn't work, you just doubled down and doubled down again. It's just, they're obviously liars, but I did think one of the beautiful things about that debate, and I'm very grateful to Patrick Bet David for setting it up, was that I thought that was clear. You know, they did a poll afterward, and they got around 30,000 people voted in it, and I took 96% 4% thought he won the debate. And you, as you know, Jesse, 4% of people are trans. So he got the trans vote, but I took the rest. And that's a, I thought that was like, okay, well, that's pretty one-sided. Everyone could see what's up here. Like these guys who had so much, so much like belief and passion as they were shaming the rest of Americans. But when they're actually pushed, they collapse like the house of cards that they are.
It was wonderful to see. And plus, if all his people were trans, they are technically undecided voters. Anyway, Dave, thank you, brother. I will see you very, very shortly. We have Light in the Mood next. By the way, it is D-Day. You like history stuff? Thefirsttv.com/history. You go sign up there. I do all kinds of history specials. You'll enjoy them, all right? Light in the Mood next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And I get people asking me a lot these days, Jesse, what do we show our kids on TV? I mean, how do we, you can't watch modern day television with all the filth on there. What do you show them? When I was a kid, you know what my mom showed me when dad was at work? If I got to watch TV, older shows. I was watching Andy Griffith's show and Mary Tyler Moore. What can you show your kids? Go find some Mr. Rogers.
Boys are boys from the beginning. If you were born a boy, you stay a boy. Girls are girls right from the start. If you were born a girl, you stay a girl and grow up to be a lady. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine. Only girls can be the mommies. Only boys can be the daddies, yes sir. Everybody's fancy, everybody's fine. Your body's fancy, and so is mine.
So wholesome. You miss it, don't you? I miss it too. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.